meeting of the Public Facilities Committee. We have a few items on our agenda, which are public hearings, and then, which I expect will take approximately, I'm going to guess, a half an hour. And then we are going to delve into the DPW budget. I imagine most of you are here for utility grants of location public hearings. Yeah, okay. On this side of the room, anyway. So, I am joined at the beginning of the meeting by Susan Albright, who is the vice chair of the committee and counselor from Ward 2, Barbara Rousseau-Glazer, who is the ward counselor from Ward 3, Vicki Danberg, who is the at-large counselor from Ward 6, and I'm Deb Crossley, the chair and counselor from Ward 5. The first item on the agenda is from Light Tower Fiber Network, petitioning for grant of location in Chestnut Street, away about 100 feet of conduit in Chestnut Street. That's item number 83-17. And we are joined by a representative. Could you please state your name and go ahead?
My name is Fred York. My name is Fred York from Senior Communications. We represent Light Tower Fiber Network with a contractor.
Okay. And is there anything you want to say about this particular petition?
We are running conduit at two locations in the city for an existing cell site on top of the Wabin Highway store for AT&T.
Well, can you just talk about the Chestnut Street petition?
The Chestnut Street petition is that we have to go in the road underneath the overpass because there is not enough room, obviously above the overpass because the train goes, and then underneath the overpass, attaching to the bridge, there is no more existing room on the on that line.
And is this for a particular service, this one that's going on?
They both need to feed over to the Wabin Hardware cell site. It's a continuous feed coming from this direction, from their light tower backbone. They're going to be feeding along Chestnut Street and then coming over to this Beacon Street one.
Okay. This one is in my ward, but does anyone else have any questions about it?
I'm just curious, though, there's a like a small mini tower or something like that. There's a hardware store.
There's a cell site existing on the hardware store, yes.
And then this feeds.
This is going to feed just another antenna up there for AT&T.
Okay.
Just another carrier.
And this just connects up to your network.
Correct.
The AT&T network.
The AT&T network,
okay.
Right.
Okay, so I'll read the other one into the record too.
That's
we can pick up the public hearing for the two since they're connected. It's 105-17, and this is the Light Tower Fiber Network's petition to install about 450 feet of conduit in Beacon Street to Windsor Street. So if no one else has any other comments or questions, I'll open the public hearing. Okay. Anybody here speak for or against or comment on this petition? Are you speaking with it? No. Okay. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing. Any further
discussion? I can move approval, but I have a question. You have a question, I guess. So you probably don't know the answer to this, but I wonder why AT&T isn't doing small cell connections instead of doing more of this networking connection, but you probably don't know the answer to that.
This my co-worker Woody,
can you
see
this? Can you state
your full name,
please?
Sure. Elwin Merlin Savage.
Wow.
That's probably Woody.
Okay. This is a small cell, a distributed antenna.
On the hardware store.
On top of, a lot of like what your next door neighbors will be having, the telephone poles. It's a micro cell,
yes.
So pretty much as small as they can make them. The directions they're going out, trying to hide them everywhere.
Yes. Okay. Well, that small cell is already there.
It is, yes. It's an existing site.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you,
Barbara.
Thanks, that's a good question. So you're saying the people who own the hardware store rent that space to AT&T for that cell site?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
So would that have come before us at some point when they first put that there?
No, if it's on private property, it goes for a special permit.
Yeah.
And that would have been, existing site, it would have been a special permit some time ago.
Okay. Thank you. And my second question is, you're going under the overpass. How do you do that?
We place rigid steel pipes on both telephone poles, so when we come down aerially, we have transition down the steel riser pole, and then obviously protection because it's in steel, and then we transition to PVC, and we run the PVC over to the other telephone pole, and then we transition again aerially in the steel pole to protect it, and then we go aerially all the way down to Beacon Street, where we have to go underground again because there's no available Verizon conduits for us to tie into to feed over to the cell site, and we have to actually construct all this from one pole to the other pole, and the same scenario is going to go on these poles. We're going to come along aerially, then we're going to transition to a steel riser pole for protection of the conduit and the cable, and then go underground, and then we're going to rise up on a steel conduit over here, and then there's a private property pole here, another private property pole here, and then we're going to attach to the strip mall, or whatever you want to call here, and then feed over to the hardware store.
So what's the size of the trench? And I imagine the engineering department doesn't
it's the width of an excavator bucket, which is 12 inches, but we make it about 18 inches for wiggle room. And the telecom industry is usually only about 28 inches deep. And then we'll do whatever the city requires for backfill. I think they do the CBS disposal.
Yes, they do, yeah.
Do we know how many years ago the last time this road was opened?
Oh, the checkup fee?
2001,
2002. Okay, yeah. Okay, so we're within the. And you come back a year or so later, because sometimes that's the whole thing.
It will burn away, sure.
How, would you remind us how large the apparatus is that you'll be connecting to?
There you go, Mr. Savage. I couldn't tell
you, unfortunately, I don't represent AT&T. But I know the cable that we're running is about the size of the tank.
Okay.
So,
you're talking about the panel.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I'm not the hardware store yet. I don't know how big it is.
And the reason for doing this is to achieve more capacity?
Better service and 5G, actually. 5G LTE.
Is there a problem now, or is this increasing capacity for future?
It was 3G at first, and then it was about 4G, now 5G coming, so it's more capacity if you want it, and higher bandwidth.
Okay.
And I don't know if it made it up.
I'm glad about that. So.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. All in favor, 8317 and 10517 for nothing. Thank you very much. We can't count these, sorry.
I think I just want to raise my hand, though.
Thank you. You're welcome to stay and observe the rest of the meeting. Of course, we'd rather go home and have dinner. We can
I think I'd rather get out of the house.
So the next item, a couple of items are from National Grid. I believe I will take these one at a time. They are in completely different locations. So item number 84-17 is National Grid petitioning for random location for 350 feet of gas main in Maynard Street, which is in Ward 3.
Yeah.
And we have also a map for this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so 8417, we have a map for this. This is to bring a new service to a renovated house or a new house, or I'm not sure what it is. Would you introduce yourself to the record?
My name is Barbara Kelleher. I am the permit representative at National Grid. And so we're starting at Maynard, correct? You want me to read the petition?
I read the petition.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, you can do it. Sometimes the folks do it too. Describe the project to us.
Yes, we'd like to bring the gas down 350 feet onto Maynard Street from Emmons to service house number 36 that's after the paid for the extension.
Okay, is this a new house or a rebuilt house?
I'm sorry, I don't know.
Okay, it's a little unusual for someone to pay for
this. Yeah, I think that's true.
Any questions from the committee? Vicki, and then?
Since you're bringing the service from Emmons, it must mean that none of these houses currently have gas service.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Are they able to participate in connect?
They've all been notified. In the future, yes, they will be able to connect. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the 36 is paying the entire cost for the...
Yes, they are.
And the street opening, can you just describe the street opening?
The street opening is a 2-foot trench. It's going to be, if you see down below where it says house 42, 350 by 2 feet. That is the size of the trench going down Main Street.
What do you use for pipe?
Oh, we use PVC pipe.
PVC
plastic.
Okay.
Good. Thank you. Well, I believe there's a gentleman here who I know will be speaking to this, but
okay.
Before we give him a chance. So you're saying you're going to lay that all down, and everyone's been notified, but no one got back to you about wanting gas service themselves.
That's correct. Not to me personally, but I assume
that's but at a later date, now that the main is there, they could.
That's correct, yes. Okay.
At their, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
I'll open the public hearing. I just want to make sure there's no other comments or questions. Okay. So, with that, is there anything you want to ask? Could you state your name and address for the record?
My name is Bob. I live at 16 Leader Street. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually excited to be out on the street. Mm-hmm. I guess my problem is you run it about 3/4 of the way or more down the street. And you're not including Rockford housing.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I would be interested in hooking up, before you come in and tear the whole street up,
mm-hmm.
and I have to deal with that, I'd appreciate it if you'd run it.
Absolutely. I will give you my card, and I'll put you in touch with the person who could do that for you.
Is that something that would happen at the same time as this, or is that an additional, you're going to come in at a later time with a separate... And separate action.
There's
going to be a separate one, and I kind of have,
you
know,
we
should get it done once.
Right.
You shouldn't
have
to agree. I agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, by the way, what tends to happen is whoever requests the service is paying the entire cost for the extension of the main line plus bringing service into their property.
Yeah.
So it's not in their interest to.
Going to tax their house.
Going to tax their house.
Do you have any advantage in extending that down?
No.
They can only understand this happens over and over again that they only respond to customer requests for service. If there's no request further up the line, then they don't do it. On the other hand, if you had requested service yourself, you would have been. Have to pay for the entire cost of the main all the way to your house. So, and you're
yes,
kind of
correct.
A catch-22,
yes. You're right.
It's actually a good thing if you're the next house, say you're number 30.
I'm not 60.
Say you're 42.
You're four more.
Oh, so I
just
got
off
the map.
Just off the grid.
24. Yeah, that would have to be installed.
There's only 4 houses to the end of the street.
Got it. Okay. Great. So, is there. You're going to get the information from the Tri National Grid, and you can put in your own request, but understand that they'll be extending the main at your expense. And once you get your neighbors along the way, as well,
Lou? Or do we have to come back again for
that? I think good question. I believe the request has to be made of national grid.
I'm just
that's what we've always been told in the past. And I don't believe we're allowed to amend.
Oh, right.
This is the petition coming through you from number 36.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So I don't believe we are allowed to expand.
So they come back another night.
We can't make a request.
So they come back another night.
Right.
That's it. You answered my question.
Oh, okay. So I'm sorry about that. We need to play by the rules here. If there's no one else to speak for or against, I'll close the public hearing.
We've
been joined by Scott Lennon, president of the board, and counselor from Ward 1, and also Alison Leary, who's not on the committee but has joined us as well, also board counselor from Ward 1. So, with that, do I have a motion to approve from...
Motion to approve, and I'd love to talk to you after for a second to make sure that we can coordinate.
Okay, let's bring it back. So your motion to approve from Councilor Bruce Blazer, all in favor?
Okay, so I didn't hear my vote.
Four and one, I'm sorry.
No,
sorry, please.
We forgive you. Okay, so next is also National Grid, item number 106-17, petition to spread the location to install about 240 feet of foreign staff mains on Old Farm Road. So there's another Old Farm Road petition, which we know has been recently paved, and so we'll get some comments from the department on this one, I'm sure. Would you like to introduce this project?
Okay. Would like to extend the main at the end of the old, well, not at the end, at the bend, I should say, of the Old Town Road to service three homes, 33, 41, and 47 Old Farm Road.
Mm-hmm.
They would like to extend it 240 feet.
Okay. Are these all three new homes, or you don't have that information?
No.
We'll open the public hearing in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the petitioner, right?
No.
Okay.
They are new.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions or comments from the committee before you open the public hearing? Okay. So, is there anyone here to speak for or against or comment on this petition? Would that be you, sir?
Myself and two of the three residents involved in this, and we're looking forward to having the extension made so that we can convert from what it's here.
We have actually received requests from developers in this area who have created brand new homes and new service. Yeah. Okay. So I'm sorry, is your name again?
My name is Mark Singh. I'm 47 Old Bobby.
Okay. So you're interested in having this happen, and okay, thank you. Anyone else here from the area who wants to speak on this petition? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. I would like to hear from engineering on this, Luis Taverna.
Engineering is going to look at the slight realignment of the gas main that you see on the paper. They have it cutting through the grassy area.
Yeah.
Well, that area is a grassy area. They're going to recommend that it hug the curb line and not cut through the grass area. That's comment number one.
Okay. And is that conditioned already?
Yeah, that's conditioned already.
Okay.
That's a field realignment. We'll get it.
Okay. And can you also remind the committee and the public about the requirements for repaving the road since it's only been...
Yeah, it's been 4 years and 11 and a half months. We're going to have to go all the way, curve.
Okay.
National Grid is agreeing to the mill and overlay
for this area of the roadway. Okay.
Can I ask a question, Deb? It might be a dumb question.
No question.
Is it, so instead of hugging the curb line and having them mill an overlay and do that, isn't it easier to go through the grass and replant the grass?
Yeah, but I understand there's more than grass and maybe some bushes and things in there, perhaps there's
a whole cul-de-sac.
Yeah,
we're on cul-de-sac.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the repaving of the road. If you're only doing curb to curb there, then rather than curb to curb the whole way.
There's quite a bit of pressing the road even without that, right? There's quite a bit of pressing of the road even without that.
This fun part, I would say, yeah. I'm just trying to make it easier.
Not dig up the
whole street. Maybe it's not taking it all up. But all
right.
I'm good.
Good.
Hopefully that's the only question I bring up tonight.
Anything else to say on this petition? Okay. So I think seeing no other folks who want to speak on this petition, I'll close the public hearing. This is Ward 8. Cheryl can't be with us tonight, so I can move it. Thank you. We have a motion to approve. All in favor? 5-0. Thank you very much. Next, we have... Thank you for joining us, and good luck. So next we have number 85-17, which again is National Grid. Actually, I'll read these two, because these are all about Adams Street, the last two items. 85-17, National Grid petitioning for grants of location on Adams Street. I'm not going to read all the particulars in here. 107-17 is also National Grid petitioning for a grant of location for gas mains at various sections of Adams Street. It's pretty much the whole street as I understand it. And we have a couple of maps here. This one, I'd like to introduce the project.
This is a relay, so existing, there are existing gas mains in the street. So, and I understand, are they scheduled to be paved?
Yes.
So we're getting in before the paving on the road. So, to replace old gas mains.
Hurry up.
So
I'll tell them that.
There are no sections of old pipe that are going to be remade. Is that correct?
Not on Adam Street. I'm sorry. Road Classic right here at the end. And I honestly don't know if I've looked at this, but not recently.
Most of Adam Street is getting repaved.
No, yes. But there's plastic, nothing to plastic. So nothing will be old, like cast iron or steel.
Okay, that would have been a better way to ask the question.
No, that's okay.
So there's not going to be any cast iron.
That's
gas
correct.
Remaining under the new repaved street.
From what I see, it's connecting to plastic here at Wiltshire, and it's also connecting to plastic there. It's at House 187. So
great. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any comments, questions from the committee besides hurry up?
I just have a question about, he's gone. You may or may not know. When you put new PVC pipe in, what do you use for the connector so that it lasts a long time?
Okay, good. When you connect to plastic, you use an electric fusion coupling. And it's a coupling that is melted. You melt the plastic underneath the coupling. And that's how plastic is, I would say.
Yeah.
And the only thing that would damage that would be if it moved and then it would crack open?
It's rare. It's a good deal.
Do you have a number of years of experience with that in it?
Well, I have.
Yes,
that's correct. And some of it is connecting to older pipes. It's not all going to be on the side streets. it's not all going to be plastic.
But isn't that going to be passed
out? Well, I'll do that. I didn't look at that. I think that they're trying to avoid connecting to cast iron pipe, so I believe that everything that is going in is going to connect to the plastic.
And the existing plastic. Yeah, but I think that the longer ones, like 69 feet on Lincoln Road, that has to go pretty far up to get the plastic that's in there. You know, so a lot of, sometimes you're only putting 23 feet in. That's only to cross the road to get to the plastic that's on the side street. Lincoln Street, the plastic is a little farther up.
Okay.
So they're putting in more on there.
Okay, well, we can keep them.
Yeah.
Well, I don't
All right.
Yeah, I was going to
hurry up, too.
That road is a disaster.
All right.
Yes,
go ahead.
Again, this may be a question that you may not be able to answer, but the city of Newton is doing a lot of work on its streets, and we 10 years ago, let's say, we were on a 200-year plan to fix our pipe work under the streets, and now we're on a 30-year plan.
Yeah.
Can you tell us anything about National Grid? And because we know we have 400 or so gas leaks that are type 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah.
You are in the process of changing everything out to PVC.
That's right.
Do you have a window for doing that?
Oh, honest to goodness, I'm a small fish in a big pond. I couldn't tell you what's going on ahead. They did these as they are doing this.
Okay.
That's fair.
That's fair.
Yes, Jim?
So we can ask that question on one thing we would end with.
Good.
So we'll do that. That's what the timeline is for to go to all PVC, and then I know they have a timeline at least for replacing all the loose chrome pipes.
Mm-hmm. And what is that timeline, do you know?
So we'll get
that. Okay, great. We'd like to know that in this committee. It's
mm-hmm. Okay, amazing.
Concentrate on that as a street first.
Apropos of that, let me finish this. So, if there are any other comments or questions, I'll open the public hearing. Is there anyone here to speak for that or comment on this petition? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing, and we can take up these two items, 8517 and 10717, together.
I'll move them forward.
Moved approval by Councilor Lennon. All in favor? With a hurry up.
Yeah.
We lay it back, I promise. Cross my heart.
I'll just mention, for whatever it's worth at this meeting, that there is a group formed in Newton who are having an opening event on May 13th. And their mission is to mark the gas leaks across the city. They are, and they are very, very focused on getting folks to eliminate these gas leaks. So I'll just mention it because they've been contacting all of us. They now have their date secure and really for the benefit of the folks in the room. So everybody wants to participate. Okay, thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
And you have your marching orders. So. So the rest of the evening is to dig into the Department of Public Works budget. Commissioner McGonigal, would you like to join us? So I will read these items into the record. Item 359-16 is the submittal of the FY 2018 to FY 2021 capital improvement plan. 359-16 parent 2 is the submittal of the FY 2018 municipal and school operating budget. And 359-16 parent 4 is the submittal of the FY 18 through FY 22 supplemental CIP. So I'm just going to hand it off to Commissioner McGonigal, and I'll let you introduce everyone who's here from the department.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd also like to thank all the council members for all your support over the last year, and especially my staff, who the majority of the key players are here tonight. We're hoping that we can answer the majority of your questions, but we won't have to get back to them. I'm sure you have plenty. We have Shane Mark, our Director of Operations, Lou Taverna, our City Engineer, Ted Jurdy, our Director of Utilities, Rob Zemanski, our Director of Finance, Juanita Trabert, our Recycling Manager, Director of... Thank you. And Nicole Friedman, our Director of Transportation.
Thank you.
So I'd like to start out with just reviewing some of our FY17 accomplishments, and then I can stop and take questions, and then we can go into our FY18 goals, and then any other budgetary questions or CIP questions that the members may have. So FY17, our highway division, we constructed 8 miles of newly paved roadway between the highway division and our contractors. We installed approximately 200 ADA ramps and 2 miles of sidewalks throughout the city. Our sanitation division maintained a disruption-free collection of solid waste. We implemented our recycling app, which anyone can obtain citywide. It has information on pickup and also disposal items. We reconvened the Solid Waste Commission meetings, and Juanita had developed a very comprehensive sustainable materials management report, which we presented to the committee also recently. In the transportation division, we provided pay-by-cell parking options for every parking meter throughout the city. We've begun the upgrading of our meters, and we're installing our first 2 new kiosks next month in the Austin Street lot. Following successful deployment of that, we'll be moving those throughout the city this coming year also. We've improved coordination with engineering and planning on all of our large projects. Historically, we had pretty much been working in our silos with planning, and there was some disconnect there. We now work closely, as you've all seen, on all of our projects going forward with community engagement and the planning process throughout each project. Continued improvements to traffic and street lighting infrastructure, and substantial progress on village enhancements. We're just finishing up Auburndale Square. Harvard Washington new signal will be in place and fully functional early summer. West Newton is in design right now with a 25% design stage. We'll be coming back to you shortly to review that. Newtonville, we've also started design with Newtonville, the Walnut Street enhancement. We actually have our second public meeting coming up this Monday on that. And then the reconstruction of Dedham, Manhattan, and Brookline intersections are also in design. We'll start construction this year. In fleet management, we are implementing a new fleet management software to track all repairs and help with the development of our vehicle replacement program. We've implemented some programs towards sustainability. We're now using biodiesel throughout our fleet. We are just installing the third electric vehicle charging station here at City Hall next week. And we're introducing our first fully electric motor pool vehicle here at City Hall this week also. We received the grant and cut the cost of that vehicle in half.
Great. What's a motor pool?
A motor pool is shared use. So there are certain divisions like planning, assessing. You don't need a vehicle part-time. Historically, these divisions have had their own vehicles, and it's not a real good use of, it's not an efficient use of vehicles. We have vehicles that sit most of the time, so we're going to have a shared vehicle system.
Is that like on an app?
vehicles can be reserved through the on. We have an online system. If you look outside engineering, you'll see a brand new electronic key box. Mm-hmm. That's what will house the keys and where the people will get and return the keys for the motor pool vehicles. Engineering, we work to ensure timely and accurate permit review and the issuing process. We're working with ISD to improve that procedure. Over the next month, we will have completed the Elliott Street Bridge project, which we feel was very successful. It opened ahead of schedule by 2 days, but it wasn't ahead of schedule. It would have come in under budget, but no one realized there were trolley tracks embedded in the bridge from quite some time ago, which was not in any plan. So we did have an extra. We had to dispose and remove of those. It was quite a lengthy process to get
steel?
That done. Yes, they were steel embedded in concrete.
Wow, so you could have sold the steel.
Well, we did, but the man hours that it took, because that's a historical structure, they had to essentially chip out all the concrete by hand. So it was a painstaking procedure. We were still fortunate to open again, as we said, ahead of schedule. We're going to implement a complete streets policy for roadway design, which we brought before you. It also allowed us to receive a $400,000 grant from MassDOT for Complete Streets, which is actually funding the majority of that signal at Harvard, Washington, with that grant. And we'll be reapplying this year also for some other projects, which we'll be bringing before you for Complete Streets. And then customer service, we respond to inquiries and makes and concerns. We've worked with departments to simplify and streamline that process. We started that with snow requests, actually. They're trying to reduce the number of requests that are in there and make it easier for people to file a complaint through the system. So we've done that. We've gone through that department-wide, actually. Each department has worked to streamline their request process. There's a lot going on, as you all know. Those are just some highlights. So if you want to have any questions on FY17, I'm happy to answer those, and I will then move on to some of our goals for FY18.
Any questions on this year?
I have a question on line changing, but why don't we wait till we get to FY18?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay, we'll do it together.
Do you have a question on 17?
I have a question on desired outcomes for 18. You mentioned that in 17 you did 8 miles of newly paved roadway. What's your hoped for number for 18?
Well, Vicki, because we haven't been looking at the paper on 18.
Okay,
so
all right, I'll wait.
On what has been accomplished for 17.
I'll wait on that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure we'll want to get in depth on it, because a big part of what we're doing is, as everyone knows, is our road construction.
Okay. And by the way, what Jim and I talked about is we're going to go through FY17 and FY18 for everything except the utilities water.
Yeah, we'll do
utilities. We'll do that as a unit after the rest. We cover the rest. Okay, that's what everybody knows what to expect. And by the way, we've been joined by Jake Offenbach, who is also a Tesla watch, and we'll do for the record.
Great.
So, keep going.
Some of our FY18 goals, we will be implementing a department-wide work order system, which will be eventually rolled out into each division. This originally started with an upgrade for the utilities division, but it's now rolled out into the fleet. It'll be in engineering and highway transportation. We don't see an immediate need for it right now in Juanita's division, but we it is customizable, and we will be able to roll it out into other divisions, even citywide. This will be integrating with the city 311 system, our citywide GIS system, the financials, and also our city fuel system, which allows to have fleet data for all the vehicles also. Highway division this year, we're moving the majority of the paving out of highway, and we're having that done by our contractors. The highway is going to focus mainly on sidewalk repairs. We're estimating 7.3 miles of new sidewalk and repairs throughout the city. Last year they did just about 2 miles, so that's quite an increase for the highway division. Also, for the first time in quite some time, we've evaluated all the city parking lots, so we're going to start doing maintenance, repair. You'll see actually some parking lots that are going to be completely repaved also. We're going to try to do at least two of those a year going forward. Of course, the ongoing pothole and street repairs are going to focus on areas of need. The paving that the highway division will be doing will mainly be small sections where we're not paving the entire street, but there may be 20 or 30 feet of section that need to be repaved, and they'll be focusing on those areas. Also looking at installing 270 ADA ramps this construction season. Sanitation, we're looking to continue to improve our efficiency for the curbside collection service. Of course, increase our recycling tonnage while reducing our trash. Juanita is going to continue to expand the education to improve our services awareness. She's done a great job putting a program together already for that. You'll start to see some of that coming out this fiscal year, actually, next month in June, and then more increased education outreach going forward into the new fiscal year. In transportation, we're going to focus, of course, Nicole Forte is bike infrastructure. So we're going to be looking at developing a bike share program. We'll be coming to you most likely early fall with that plan. We'll be working on that over the summer. The parking kiosk implementation, which we've discussed. The village improvement project, which we're very involved with planning, and Nicole spearheads the majority of that also with engineering. Traffic calming and street improvements will continue. We're purchasing some equipment where we can do some in-house analysis, so we don't have to rely on outside consultants for doing some of that evaluation, some speed equipment, things of that nature. We'll complete Washington Street, Harvard Street traffic improvements in FY18, substantial completion of Dedham, Manhattan, Brookline. Also, we've been construction of West Newton, which we'll look at completion most likely in spring of 18 for that project. And we're looking to start Newtonville, Walnut Street in the spring of 2018 also. There will also be considerable improvements in pavement markings throughout the city. We've significantly increased that budget. Nicole and her staff have been out evaluating all of our pavement markings throughout the city, and we'll have a comprehensive plan going forward for restriping and remarking pavement markings, crosswalks, things of that nature throughout the city. In fleet management, we'll be developing a program to certify our technicians, so we have an ASC Blue Seal Repair Facility, which is an industry standard, and working towards continued efficiencies within the fleet maintenance. We just brought on a new assistant fleet superintendent. We just had our current employee was here for almost 30 years, just retired this winter. So we just brought on a new individual who has all the required certifications. We're looking to advance the fleet in that direction. Engineering, again, the goal, bring projects in on schedule. Timely and accurate permitting, as we know, it has been an issue in the past, and we look to improve that. Engineering will now be fully responsible for all the paving throughout the city. They're working with Data, our paving engineering consultant, who we presented the road program with recently. Initially, we're going to do 6.6 miles of mill and overlay, complete streets, where we're doing sidewalks, curbing, ADA ramps, signage on every street going forward. We received some very aggressive bids during our bidding process, so we anticipate being able to add mileage to that. Also, as we've discussed earlier, we're going to increase significantly the maintenance that we do on the roads, which historically we hadn't done. So this year we'll be touching over 40 miles of streets throughout the city through paving, crack sealing, fog sealing, micro surface, hot in place, and tape seal throughout the city. We've just put the maintenance contract out to bid. We'll be back to you in the summer again to explain that process once we're going. Hopefully we see the same, because we're doing so much work, we're seeing this aggressive bidding, and hopefully will continue to allow us to do more work going forward.
What's tape seal?
Tape seal is another form of, like a chip seal. It's another form of treatment. So we're going to come in and explain all those to you.
Okay.
Once we just determine what roads we're doing initially, we'll come back to PF and do what we did previously. And what I want to do is explain each of those procedures with pictures. We have some short video clips.
We saw that when we did the street scan.
Yes. But we'll show you, and we'll do it in detail now, and you can see where these treatments are going to happen throughout the city.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Those are some of our highlights and goals. I'm sure you have questions, but please feel free.
Susan, then Barbara.
Is Juanita's stuff going to be done separately, or is that just part of what?
I have Juanita has a bunch of highlights. We could have a meeting on just what she's done this year also. So, but yes, please. Right, with the new Solid Waste Commission, which there's a lot of good coming out of that.
So I was at the wonderful event that last week that Juanita sponsored in the cafeteria, and you had all those wonderful vendors and so forth. And Councilor St. Joseph said there's a grant that you can apply for in that regard. Can you tell us about that, and if you want to do it, if that's something you want to do?
So we have discussed the grant. Part of the grant, I mean, you can discuss the grant, but I'll just, a quick overview. Part of the grant would allow us to do a pilot for organic, curbside organic. We're very interested in pursuing that, especially since it's a pilot, and this was a huge fan of pilots, especially when we're not paying for it. So it would give us a real good case of the pros and cons of this program.
So volunteer word six.
So, what's the timing of that, and do you need something from us to make it happen?
So, the timing, the deadline, it's a Massachusetts grant, and the deadline is June 14th of this year. So, the grant would expect to be extended within 2 years. So, I haven't done any preliminary work yet, but I'm interested in doing it, and up to 15% of the grant funds can go for non-capital costs. So that could be for a part-time person to actually run the pilot and oversee it. The range is between $10,000 and I think $500,000, so it's pretty expensive. It can cover things like the actual cart, if it's a third cart that gets added to the system. It could cover the actual hauling and collection, and all of those would be considered the capital cost of the program. So I looked into it a little bit. I made one call to DEP, just kind of to as a very preliminary conversation, and I am interested in this.
Okay, so what I did is what you're hearing, that's what happened.
To follow up on that, a group of cops out of that meeting, which I did not attend, and who were very gung-ho to put together a docket item, which I don't think we can take up in the committee until June, and maybe what we do is just hear from you at the end of June about what you submitted and what your expectations or hopes are. That might be the way to handle that second meeting in June.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I just have two more questions, and one is about the line markings, or what do you call them?
Pavement markings.
Pavement markings. I Googled the word, I searched the word line, and it wasn't there, so then I found it later as pavement markings. So I know you're going to do a comprehensive plan, and then the idea is you would do the whole city. Is that this year?
Sure. Well, it won't be the entire city. I can give you a quick synopsis, and Nicole will correct me if I'm wrong, but I will be. We've done an evaluation of all the long lines throughout the city. That's complete. 38% of those are in poor condition. That's about $115,000 to restripe. So that's about 42 miles of lines. We've increased our pavement marking budget this year. We're proposing $225,000 in our pavement marking budget. We'll be able to address those 38% long lines that are in poor condition. We're finishing up our crosswalk evaluation. The crosswalks are critical. Last year we focused, as I said, around the schools and in the village centers. We still have some of that to continue, and then we'll go to the secondary crosswalks also. So after this year, we'll be in very good shape. If we continue to fund that, then we'll be at a point in the next few years where it'll just be maintenance going forward. Won't be so far behind the eight ball on all of this as we are right now.
So the crosswalks that I use all the time are the ones right here in City Hall, which is like almost non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones by the Star Market in Newtonville, which is also in the same condition. So it feels like those are the kinds of things you have to do every year because they're so, first of all, the roads are so used in those areas. So that I don't know how you can get by just doing them every other year.
We can. It depends on the traffic. Some real high volume traffic areas may wear every year, but they should last about 3 years in our area. Snow plowing takes a toll on them. Even with the thermoplastic, there's claims that you know you can get up to 5 years, but we don't really see that. But it should be more than a year in most areas. And then in some of the lightly traveled areas, you'll see that five-year life. So there is significant life, especially with the new thermoplastic material, which we're using wherever we can going forward.
So let me just make sure I know what you're doing. So you have $115,000 for the straight lines.
Yes.
Which you're going to do. And that leaves about $110,000 left for other things.
Yes.
So what will you be doing with that?
Well, that will be the crosswalks.
The most important crosswalks or something?
Yes. Well, we're doing that evaluation right now. So during this evaluation, we look at conditions, and then we prioritize them also from there. As I said, the schools are number one, the immediate village centers, and we work outside from both of those.
Okay. So you did the schools last summer?
We did. Right?
And the village centers last summer?
Yes.
And they...
There's still some areas that need to be done. We'll have to go back and do some. You know, crosswalks on Center Street are probably going to have to be done yearly. Again, where there's very high traffic.
So some of them you'll get to the worst conditions. And then it'd be great if you could tell us, you know, how much, I don't know if maybe you know it, how much would it cost to do, if you had to do everything every year, how much would that cost?
Once we have the evaluation complete, it's easy to determine that.
And my one other question has to do with the kiosk. So some of the spaces now where you park, like in the center, the sticker where you can see the zone and the space are very big and you can sit in your car and do it. And the ones in Newtonville, for example, you have to get up right next to the meter to actually see the numbers. So in the kiosk, are you going to be able to see the number of your space right as you're sitting in your car?
Yeah. We're absolutely fine.
Yeah. So where the meters are now will be a sign, a physical sign.
And it'll be big enough to see it.
It will be big enough to see from your vehicle.
Okay. That sounds good to me. That's what I'm saying.
Every meter will have its number on it?
Every parking space, yes. We'll have a designated number.
Oh, somebody else
go.
Did I
miss I just want to follow on the line of the pavement marking. So the last couple of years I've always said our crosswalks are very inconsistent throughout the city. Some places we have like two lines, some places we have hashing, some places they look dynamite. Is there going to be like a consistent plan for what we're doing? And in some of the high traffic, high volume areas, are they going to stand out? Like, for instance, I've always advocated to have them like, you know, in Needham where they have the light green crosswalk where you can see it when you're coming up to it. You know, the one of the intersections there, like on Highland up that way. I just think that they're just woefully inadequate. That's the term that I've used. And I'm hoping that there's always consistency to them. And I also was wondering who's actually going to be doing them, because I know down in my neck of the woods, whoever the contractor was did a horrible job. And so I'd like to know, I want to ensure that it's not the same contractor that's coming back. And if they are, who's overseeing that? That was my question.
Okay.
So I can tell you, 2 years ago we had an issue with our line painting contractor. All of our new contracts going forward, we now have two alternates. So if we have an issue with our first contractor, we don't need to go out, resubmit a bid, and go back out to bid. By that time, the season would be over. So now we have options also that we can go to if we're not happy with the first contract, because we did have that issue in the beginning. As far as the standards, right now we're just putting out an RFP with planning for our street design guide, because that's what we need in the city, especially all this work that we're doing. We're going to have standards for everything we do. So as far as crosswalks, street lighting, sidewalks, all that is going to be standardized and will be published in our street design guide going forward. We're also looking at the colored crosswalks. We're going to do one of those, I believe, in Manhattan on Brookline to see if that makes, we feel that does make a difference in these areas where visibility is a problem, or we really want to get the driver's attention. We don't have a traffic signal or a flashing beacon or something of that nature, just something that stands out. So yes, we are looking at that.
Just Paul, who will oversee the program?
Transportation division.
Like Nicole, or yes. You know, so there have been some questions at times, I know they do a lot of it at night, and then the oversight, and who's overseeing the contractor, and then you wake up at 7 the next morning and someone throws through the lines, and those lines are still on some of the streets. So I just want to make sure that someone's overseeing that properly. So, all right.
Whatever. All right. So, Evan, you're going to be repaving the municipal parking lot, a few, yeah, or some of them.
Some of them.
Are there plans, and also that there's going to be one more electric station here at City Hall, are there plans to put in EV charging stations in our municipal lot?
We have not looked at that yet.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We will know that.
We have to be at the party.
Yes. And then I wonder if this is not the correct time, I understand, but if Nicole could talk, because you're going to finalize plans for meet and settle survey?
Yeah, so, I
think that's the best. Nope, the lady has the best. You're the professional on that.
So, what are they going to do is put in a well-down medium street area,
Okay. Shall we hear more of that? Thank you. And also on the lines, I know you're doing a comprehensive site, which is amazing, a big city. I assume, Council Albright and I, if we see some egregious place where we could just contact you, right?
Yes, we have a lot that are made for, and we are there for. What will happen is, when we look at the crosswalks and the long lines, it's going to be... it's
going to
take a couple of years, but everything
will
take
care.
Okay.
Well, that
was a little bit prioritized by type of
just
thing.
Just you and Susan, so
yeah.
I see one I can
tell. No.
It's important
to put people in their place.
Just on that though? Okay. No, just who does your school parking lot? Who paints the lines in the school parking lot?
The schools are responsible for it.
Schools are responsible for painting the lines in the school parking lot?
Yes, we don't do anything on...
What's that come out of the charter maybe?
Park them, right?
It may be buildings, I'm not sure. It may be Josh. It's not public works.
We don't look for buying power to kind of do that whole thing and figure out if that's, again, if they get their own contractor overseeing it, paying a different cost, like how does that?
Yeah, no, I honestly don't know. I'll check on that.
And people who use that can transfer their own, they put it transfer through. I used that to see what the budget.
Have we done that historically?
Yeah, that's what we did as clients. All the new tape markings we did as a client when I moved in there. Well, typically it happened as Micron, the operations director won't contact Nicole and say, I'd like for you to do this in this lot. We'll provide a cost estimate once they approve it. We utilize one of our contractors to do the work and then transfer it.
So the money is transferred from the school charter maintenance fund back to DPW when that happens?
Yes. Yeah. We do use some third party work
for the charter maintenance.
What's that?
So let's hope it's on charter maintenance.
I think that's the account.
No, you don't need to go for money.
Again, they close their account. I'm not sure what account they really want.
Yeah, no, I was just curious.
Yeah, we're going to transfer it back to the school fund.
It's not in our plan, a marketing plan at all, though. So like you say, when you talk about buying power, we're not including that in our bid.
I mean, not saying it's not further discussion, though, in terms of sufficiencies and why.
Yep.
Was that on?
Yeah, it was just on the line.
On the completion of the lead service replacement, you have projected for June 2018, a year from now. Where are we on that? It says 580 more or less services. Is that still about where we are?
Yes, there's a few less than that. There were some during the process. We're still at around 570, I believe. Mm-hmm. We've sent out all the letters. We have the funding will be in place at the end of May. Mm-hmm. We have a contract ready to go with the contractor. So far, to date, we've received just under half of those responses back of people who want to have the lines replaced. So that's actually really good for the first go-around. We'll continue to reach out to the people also.
We're going to come back to water sewer stuff, so
okay.
Any questions on that, should we hold?
All right. Oh, that's fine. That's enough. Yeah.
If I may, Allison Leary is here, and she has to leave since she has a question, so I'm going to move it off the table.
Okay, thank you very much. It's 2 points. One on the shuttle, Nicole, is there any discussion about having a shuttle service that would work with some of the other communities? Because I know Kenneth Woodland, who is a councilor in Watertown, and we were talking about that, and I think we were talking specifically about the Chapleston Park area, maybe there would be hubs where we would consider doing something like that. Is that good? And it sounds like you're doing a very local show right now.
Well, if Bridge does decide to do something with us, their plan is most likely to be building off some of their existing shuttles. So they already have, they're already going to Austin or Watertown, and it would come out to me from there. And then once it's out there during the day, might start doing some short 1 mile trips here, back and forth, that's my last mile, and then I'm going to go back out for the commute. So it's to be determined. What we're looking at is a public-private partnership, which gives us a little bit less control, but less money as well.
Okay. And then just one other question was to Juanita. I see that we're changing the way that we're tracking our solid waste and recycling, because now you're talking about reducing the tonnage and using pounds, and last year we used percentages. We had a pretty ambitious goal of 45%. So could you give me a baseline, for example, in terms of how much tonnage we're diverting now, and what your goal would be, and can you use the percentage-wise method anymore, or can you think about, or is that just comparing apples to oranges?
So, I would say a big chunk of your question is actually addressed in the report. There's a lot of information that I've collected that I put in there that I don't have available at the top of my head. But I would say that the percentage really ends up being very confusing. It ends up being a number that is not immediately useful to anyone, to myself, to you all, because the questions that immediately pop up are, does that include yard waste? What does that include? Is that only curbside? Is that stuff at the resource recovery center? So it's just not an outwardly useful figure to begin with. And then it's not really relatable at individual household level. So if you hear the number, 35%, is that good? Is that bad? I have no idea. So it's not relatable. And so that's what
that's why I would like to move towards this figure of pounds generated per household served. And so there is research to back that up, but it's basically for those two reasons that I just stated. And so the numbers that are in the FY18 goal are based on numbers from FY16, so that's the last 2% of data that we had. And so I'm interested in reducing our trash tonnage, and it's by a specific number. So it was 1237 pounds per household in FY16, and I'm interested in cutting it down to 1100 pounds or less per household and then on the opposite, I'm interested in increasing the recycling by, I would say, less of a significant percentage. So I believe it was like 720-something in FY16, and I would like to see that go over 800 pounds per person.
Do you think that would actually reduce the CNN savings in the
state? Definitely.
Yeah. Can I ask you, what are we spending on removing the yard waste
now?
$7.25
to the yard. Right. So, year-to-date in FY17, it has been $212,000 to remove yard waste. Now, that figure is actually high because we had some yard waste that was still on site from the previous season. Mm-hmm. And so this year, because of the solar project, we had to remove all of that material. So that was basically legacy material that this season, so we just started collecting yard waste a month ago, we won't have to worry about. We wiped the slate completely clean in February of this year. So everything that was collected in calendar year 16 was removed. And so in FY18, we won't have legacy material to
have a regular, usual amount that you'll be removing.
Yeah.
Because we do collect a lot of yard waste.
We do collect a lot of yard waste. I would say we don't actually know what a typical amount is, because we have never experienced this where we have every single thing that we took in 1 year was taken out. Because previously we always had the things to store them.
That's it. And if we could get some of that compost coming back in the empty cup, that would be great. If there's room to store a smaller amount of it for new residents to come and get it.
I think that's possible.
Okay, I think you've done a terrific job. It's something you're doing so much. And I see it's different around the things. I do really appreciate it.
Thank you. I do want to say my first acknowledge that Amy Sandiolo, Councilor from Ward 4, has joined us, and now we have another committee member, Mark Laredo, Councilor from Ward 7, fresh from the soccer field, joining us as well. So, I think everyone at the Susan, you had another question.
Well, so the numbers in your budget, they're not clear to me. Minuses everywhere, little minuses everywhere. There's one more staff, I saw that. I don't know where that new staff person belongs. I was curious about that.
That's the transportation coordinator in transportation working
in
with
the
whole.
Okay. Yeah. But there were minuses here and there that I didn't really understand all of them. I don't know that I really need to, but I guess the biggest chunk of minuses is I probably that one goes down to a million and then I need to fill it in as we progress.
Sure. So in the snow and ice, and that's where, if you look at our proposed budget on the main public works page, you'll see we show a 1.5% reduction from FY17. That's not going to be a true number. There's $1 million every year that's put into our snow budget.
The rest of those funds are held in the comptroller's budget. Okay. We've averaged over the last few years about $5.2 million in snow removal. That's right where we were this year. We had $5.2 million that we spent in snow removal. That's been our average over the last 3 years, Ron.
Yeah.
15 was around 7, I
so
think.
So it's more than what those
should be spending?
That's crazy.
This is what's done every year, as I understand. There's $1 million put into public works budget.
I understand. I'm sorry. If you said that we spent $5.2 million this year and it says 4.5.
So the budget is published, I think we finalized these pages April 1st. We're still getting bills in.
We have snow in it.
And we do pay our employees, they do get a stipend to the people. So when we forecast out, we pay 5.2, that's taking into account any bills that we haven't paid that might not hit finance box or hit
the March.
There's going to be a small bearing, but it's not.
Okay. I thought snow was over.
And just so if you did make that snow removal account $5 million, which has been the historical average over the last few years, our budget actually increases by approximately 2.5%. I believe it's 2.65. We did run those numbers.
So under vehicle maintenance is minus 26,000 and fringe benefits 16,000, and under street maintenance is another minus of 118,000. There's lots of minuses under streets and sidewalks. I just didn't understand.
Right. Well, in personnel services, as you have turnovers, this year we did have quite a few retirements. We had some people resign. As we bring people into the new scale, if someone left the top step, it's a significant difference for new people coming in. So we didn't reduce positions in vehicle maintenance or things of that nature. Some of the larger items.
Like expenses on the streets and sidewalks is minus $1 million.
I think what he was saying, he shifted that to help, right?
Shifted that to what?
Didn't you say that now the streets are all being done contracted, you're doing
correct
the sidewalk, so you shifted that into street maintenance to pay the cost.
Well, I was wondering if that is the shifting category.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I'm glad you left it, because I was you could elaborate just a minute or two more on that.
That would help.
But that's the biggest change.
Yeah, just like you said, there was overview of kind of where the numbers have shifted. We do have money that was moved from the override cost center for.
Yeah, the supplemental streets.
Not the 118.
So that money has now been moved into the engineering cost center.
It's on page 1 of the public works section.
Mm-hmm. That's where I am.
Yes. So if you go to page 10, and you have your reporting back and forth, but if you do go to page 10 and back and forth for public works, the engineering cost center now has an allocation of $750,000 under feeding supplies to the override, $450,000 for engineering services, and a substantial increase in, well not substantial, but an increase in personal services. And that was because we moved money from that other cost center into this.
So
we didn't lose any money.
I think that the bottom line was that different, so I just didn't understand what was happening. So that might be useful, because I didn't read that in the narrative about the shifting of the money.
Okay. So historically, that was done.
The council to say that you've done that in the paragraph.
Historically, that was done so we knew where that $1 million of override money was going.
Yes.
Now that we're spending $9+ million a year, we're just rolling it into that because we know that million is being spent on paving and sidewalk work.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm trying to turn off my phone. So that's it?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else? Scott?
I don't have the vacancy report. How are you doing on the vacancy? I remember looking out before, but the question I really had was, I think there had been a
don't want to be paid to use the word policy, but for a while we weren't hiring a lot of laborers unless they got their license to drive.
Mm-hmm.
Truck if it's a class, which class is it?
Class C.
Class C, all right. So I think, while laudable, I think what happened was we were having trouble filling the positions of laborers, right? So I think we were trying to, we had talked a little bit about shifting away from that. Can you talk about that a little bit? Or if you haven't shifted, I just wanted to know how you're doing with regard to filling vacancies that you need out in the field.
No, we haven't. Just so everyone, historically, to have a job, one of the minimum requirements for highway utilities was you had to have a commercial driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
It's not uncommon for a construction worker not to have that if they're not a truck driver. You can run equipment and not have to have a commercial driver's license. So this year we did negotiate with the union and we worked with HR where we can now hire people in without that commercial driver's license, and we give them 6 months to get the license. We train them, we provide the vehicle, because we know that was an issue out there, and we were seeing that. We've seen some qualified people coming through the door, but they didn't have that Class B, which was a minimum requirement. So now we are able to do that. We have recently hired some workers without the CDL.
It was helping us fill
positions. It has been helping. This time of year, it starts to slow down again. We started to fill positions. This time last year, I believe we had 30 vacancies. I looked today, and it was down to 14. So we're making headway, but we're not. When the economy is good, this is historically in public works, municipalities, we don't get the inflow of applicants that we could because the work on the outside is favorable. When times change, people flock to our doors. And again, highway is also is a feeder. It's entry-level work. So anytime we have another position open, we lose highway individuals. It's very frustrating for the superintendents there, but that's industry-wide also. We're not alone in that.
Cool. Thank you.
So I have a couple questions before we move to water sewer. I wonder if you could talk about your equipment scheduling from the CIP. You talked a little bit about the fact that you're developing a fleet, a plan for the fleet, and that you're going to have that drafted. I think you told me, I don't know if you said it again tonight, that we're going to see a fleet management plan before the CIP is issued in October. Right?
Yes, we'd like to include that in the upcoming CIP.
So can you talk about the CIP that we're looking at here? I don't think there's been any amendments to it since you gave it to us, but I looked at it after we spoke, and you know, you see that there are a couple of vehicles in 2018, and then a couple in 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022. I guess a lot of them are probably placeholders.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are in dollars. Could you just talk a little bit about a strategy relative to the fleet and condition of your equipment now?
Sure. So part of our new software also contains an algorithm in that software that takes into account age of the equipment, mileage, hours of use, and also a grading component that we will do internally. That is all coming into play next month as a deliverable for that software. So once we input our inventory and we grade all of that equipment, we'll have some data similar to what we did with the road. Instead of just saying that truck's old, we need to replace it, we'll have good data that takes into account maintenance history also on what we should replace and what we should be replacing going forward. Historically, Public Works has just put a dollar figure, as you said. We usually know what we need, but it's because it's broken down. It's at the point where it can't be repaired or it isn't viable to repair something. Right now we have a piece of equipment that has a $95,000 repair bill, and it's a $250,000 piece of equipment that's 20 years old. We shouldn't be owning that, so we're going to try to get us out of that predicament that we're in.
But it's not a $250,000 piece of equipment.
When that was,
it's not worth anything right now.
When that was new, yeah.
Okay, just expand on it just a little, and then I'll go. Can you talk about the equipment in terms of substantive area, like just roughly? Like, I mean, sometimes you're
denoting a piece of equipment for the water department versus you might need a piece of snow removal equipment. I remember a couple years ago when we had that dreadful winter, we were talking about the need for, at the time we talked about the need for much more, we thought, sidewalk snow plows specifically for sidewalks. Can you roughly talk about where you are within each of those major areas?
Sure. So to address the sidewalk issue, our first winter here, Shane and I, we got together with Highway, and sidewalks were an issue. So what we did is we leased some equipment that year because we didn't have a good handle on what we thought the city needed. This is what the guys thought they needed. So we leased 10 Bobcat skid steer loaders with snow blowers and plow attachments on a 3-year lease so we could try this equipment and see if it was really what the city needed. With kind of the determination that's probably not the answer for that. Again, it was like a pilot for the city. Mm-hmm. We do use them, but there are other pieces of equipment which we found work better. So, again, we won't be renewing the lease in that case. In the case of equipment replacements, historically utilities have done a good job tracking and having an internal replacement program, mainly based on use of vehicle and years. They've been turning out equipment over on a regular basis, so we don't see that issue as much in the utilities department. They've been spending about $300,000 a year on equipment, and through the internal data that they have, manually they've had an equipment replacement program, but nothing that was true data. But because they were consistent in doing it, they've maintained a fairly decent fleet. In Highway, because we've been budgeting about the same amount, about $300,000 historically, and it's a much larger fleet.
It's not enough.
No, it's definitely not enough. The fleet replacement program will identify what we should be spending each year, and again, we can change the parameters. As if we want to see everything under 15 years, and then it may take us a few years to do that, and then we go to under 12 years. And there are certain pieces of equipment that we can keep to 12 years. There are other vehicles we don't want to keep that long. Again, depreciation comes into play. It is a factor. Even though in the municipal world we tend not to look at that, the total cost of ownership comes into play. And we can have better equipment for the same amount of money if we turn it over on a regular basis because that equipment has some value at salvage time. Right now, we're selling our equipment for scrap value. So that's the predicament we're in right now, and that we're going to get to that replacement.
That's helpful for me. Thank you. Mark?
I'm going to follow up on that. But, the ice melters that we bought a couple of years ago, what's happened with them?
We have one. We went to use it this year, and it malfunctioned. It was something we couldn't fix on site. We had to send it to the dealer. I'm not a big fan of the ice melters. They belong on airports.
And that was what, $300,000?
Yeah. We did purchase the snow blower last year. We used it this year. Worked phenomenal. We used it in clearing some of the village centers. We used it in stacking snow at our snow dump. So, again, that's a piece of equipment.
That's the machine that shaves the road vertical.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, but very successful.
So that's one that allows you then to park on a heavy snowstorm, right?
Correct.
Okay. Because, I remember, I think I mentioned a couple of years ago, driving out to, like, Wellesley or something during that horrible year we had, and they had that kind of piece of equipment.
Yeah.
You could park.
Yeah.
You couldn't park.
We can get right to the curb now. We have that capability. We only have one, so I'm not a big fan of the snow melter, and actually the snow melter we have is not a real commercial unit. It really makes the parking lot.
Yeah. Okay, sell that.
It's good, and we can.
If it's not functioning the way you want, it's like having an old car. You get rid of it.
Oh, well, it's got some value.
Actually, you may have to look through the process. I don't know.
We will come back with you. We actually have contracted an auction site for our equipment. It's all municipal auction. We put an RFP out for it. Just to get rid of this junk that we have. So people are actually paying us some money for our junk, but something like that has value. That's how we sold our screener.
We did.
We got market value for our screener through that auction site.
I'm curious what we got for the screener.
I believe it was $85,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was market value at the time, the estimate that we received as a trade-in.
Uh-huh.
So as you're putting together this plan is, you know, for his maintenance. What kind of internal discussion are you having about the equipment that you need that you may not have at all,
mm-hmm.
and that you should be buying, or other equipment that maybe is not like the ice melter, not needing to be? What kind of internal discussion is going on in that regard?
Sure. So this year we demoed quite a bit of equipment this year. We demoed some newer style salt spreaders, some new sidewalk machines, which the deposits are very happy with. Working with Ted and his crew, we also bring equipment in and we demo equipment. We had a new excavator for a couple of weeks.
Demonstrate.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. I just pulled that up.
Okay.
Go ahead. I know I'm getting rid of.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, so we're Axe Utilities is putting out the two new dump trucks. We are purchasing, they're actually called hook lifts. It can drop a dump body and pick up a sand spreader. So in 10 minutes, that truck changes versatility. So we can go from salting to removing snow within 10 minutes, where now we don't have that capability. So the guys have been very receptive to it. It gives buy-in to them, and the guys on the ground know what they need. So again, we're working very closely.
I would suggest that when you're engaged in this process, that you think big. And even if in other words, I would hope you don't get constrained by, well, we only have a certain amount of money and that's all we can do. I think it'd be better to think big. Not, it's what you really need to do your job properly, really properly. What state of the art equipment you need. And then we talk about the ability to finance it and what we do and don't do. What I worry about sometimes is that we don't get the, if you're making all those decisions internally, we as a council don't get to see them. And we may be, you may be able to make a very compelling case in some instances to spend more money, even a lot more money. If in the long run, we're going to do a lot better. So I really just urge you to think that way.
We will share that data because we're in a position in certain departments where that's going to be the case. We're going to need a significant investment.
What are we talking about? You know, kind of, are we talking a couple million bucks a year type of investment?
Our fleet, just back of the envelope, is probably about a $30 million fleet. If we were to spend 10% a year, $3 million a year, we get to a point where we never had a vehicle that was more than 10 years old.
Mm-hmm. And what are we spending now?
$650,000 this year. Mm-hmm. Normally, mm-hmm. last year was $600,000.
So we could double that.
$670,000
in 18. You're basically saying we have to spend almost five times as much money as we're spending once we get going in order to do it right, and it would take even more to catch up.
And it's going to take more to catch up. Again, there are pieces of equipment it's a good average, though.
I understand that not every piece of equipment is going to get, it's going to last more than 10 years, and it depends mm-hmm. on the equipment. But I'm rather ignorant about this, but I presume it's like a car. When you get a 15-year-old car and you actually go out and get a new car, you sit around and say, oh my gosh, you know, I get an air conditioning radio now, you know? And you should think that way because it really does change dramatically in your safety features. They're the same thing. So I would think there's maybe not as much in the equipment you buy, but some of that as well.
Right. And there are many benefits. And at the end of the day, we look at total cost of ownership. Repairs and maintenance, never mind the downtime.
What about fuel efficiency?
Fuel is going to be, the new vehicles are much more fuel efficient, the standards that are coming out. So again, it's a win-win.
Are you doing these costs, as you're thinking this through, are you doing these cost analyses that are factoring in repair, maintenance, fuel, what the cost of a new vehicle would be?
Yeah. Again, that's another reason for tying our fuel delivery system into our work order management system, so we have constant updates. It also gives us mileage and hours of equipment, so we know when it's due for service. No one has to go and look.
Mm-hmm.
So we can
mm-hmm.
run reports. There are a lot of benefits and a lot of good things coming.
Do we have enough folks to service the vehicles properly?
We do. We are well staffed in the maintenance department. There's some training that needs to happen. I will say that. Again, we just brought on a new assistant superintendent. Who is very well versed in the training, has all the current certifications, so we'll be seeing that ramp up all day.
I just want to say this, that the quality of the data in here and the quality of the data that you bring to us that you're gathering is is just wonderful. I mean, the staff seems terrific. The information on your and I'm sure the same will be about water tanks. But the quality of what you've got here and what you've got to back it up is just to a different level. It's really good.
Thank you. We know we have a lot of work to do, but we do. We're gathering that data and we're making good headway, and I still thank you for your support.
Yeah, I think I agree. A follow-up question on the fleet, though. So the fleet, I'm guessing, and tell me if there's truth in this, that the fleet that serves the Department of Public Utilities might be a little easier to have on a schedule that makes sense for that division, because we have very robust funds now that we can use to keep those pieces of equipment up to date, whereas we haven't been putting the money into the overall department as much. And you very clearly said that the highway department has a bigger fleet, and yet we're spending the same amount of money. So I completely agree with where Mark was going, and I remember clearly that when you first came to us, your particular expertise in fleet development and fleet management, and so I'm really glad you're getting to put those skills to work for Newton now.
Can I ask you one question?
Sure. Thank you.
Go ahead.
So, just if you know historically, I mean, we're spending about $600,000 now. Has it been at that level for like the last 10 years? Were we spending more at one point? Have we increased?
Ted, do you know historically? But I'm sorry, I don't know.
I was more just curious as to whether we're seeing some shift or not.
It's historically been about that. I mean, there was a year, going back maybe 4 or 5 years, there was a year where they, if I remember right, allocated, million, I don't know what the number was, because we had a lot of large construction truck, old mat trucks that we had to replace. They all kind of died at the same time. But historically, it's been right around there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And just to follow up on that, I am very much in favor of bringing the average age of our fleet down, because I think that even with the snow melting apparatus, if we have now repaired it so that it's in working order, and we think that that's not what we can get the best use out of, if we can sell that at auction, let's get rid of it and put that money toward something that we can really use. That's really all that I had to say on the fleet. But I think that the questions that have been asked and the comments about where we should be spending our money, if we're spending $650 now and we should be spending $3, then it might make some sense for us to do a resolution on that.
I'm going to guess that we should wait until we get the fleet management plan that Jim is putting together, because I don't think we have.
Yeah, we would have good data then. And,
mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And that would be, we want to present that as part of this upcoming CIP in October.
Good.
That's my plan. Again, we had a lot of low-hanging fruit, and we actually had things that needed more attention than the fleet, but again, that's a critical component of everything we do.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we have a handle on our roads, our transportation, our signals, this was my next area to go after. So we will be doing that.
We're at a point now in our fleet where we don't have any more 25-year-old Mack trucks.
We still have some. they're used in emergency. Yeah, we had to pull them out this winter a couple times, but again, it's not ideal.
I want to say, too, and I can't wait for my walk through the Elliott Yard. But there's been a lot of activity.
Well, it's going to count for the
for the record, that Jim and the team have been doing a great job cleaning up the yard. I mean, it really, because we have the greenway now, it was not fun to look back at our own city property as being one of the worst abutters to the greenway. And a tremendous amount of work has been done to eliminate material you don't need to have there. And I know there's more work coming to fence it off and put in abutments and so forth for the active excavated pile and stuff like that. But it's a lot of work is going on over there. So I always think that a clean site means that we have more efficient operations. And I think it's going very nicely in that direction. Let me get one more question over here from Mr. Ogletoff.
I think since then, maybe the single best thing the city has done in the last year, and truly it's fantastic. And I pull that thing out all the time as my constituents. And they're always talking about how the year is going to be the road to get to, but there's data behind it, it's incredible, it's fantastic. I just thought you'd do about this a little bit, but I would love a 10-year ranking for that as opposed to 5-year.
Okay, we'll supply. I've been holding out on supplying the data we have because I wanted to get the bids out. I want to understand what we're going to do this year because even when we started early on this year, because we're doing a different type of work, the complete streets work, we weren't going to be able to do the mileage that we thought we were initially before we even did street scans. We were into so many miles. So now that we've brought street scan on, so in the CIP, which is data information from before we finalize street scan, there are streets in there that people say, oh, my street's coming up. And that's my only fear. We don't want to let people down. This first year, we'll have a good idea of what we can actually do in a paving season. The council has just approved funds for us to get started now, which we hadn't previously had. So this time next year, but I will supply that. We will supply that data. It's just I don't want to give people a false sense of hope.
What is uncertain is the pace or the prioritization of the actual.
It's going to be both, to be honest with you. We're taking on an enormous amount of work. Again, I'm concerned that
why would the prioritization change from the.
Well, the prioritization is going to change also. We just saw it on Adams Street. We were ready to pave Adams Street. The gas company said, nope, it's not on our 5-year outlook. We went back to them again this year at our meeting, and they said, well, there is some pipe in there that could be leak prone. So they decided to do the entire street, which is what we want. Mm-hmm. So again, we hadn't planned on doing that. It happened. We were planning on paving a portion of Beacon Street. During our leak detection, we found some leaking pipe in there. So we determined, you know what, that's older pipe in there. We're going to replace that section. This was up until a month ago. So the prioritization will...
Those are interesting questions. Those are the exception, not the rule. In general, this was presented, though, as... not only being informed by CCN data, but also being informed by gas companies and utility companies' schedules.
Right. But the schedules change because during our investigations, we find issues. Again, we hadn't planned on replacing this water main on Beacon Street because it wasn't on a portion of our schedule. It's being prioritized leak-prone pipe, but for some reason, we have multiple leaks there. So we're going to go in and change that. So those are the things that happen. And like I said, these are two streets out of how many? The 8 that we were doing. So it's a real concern. I don't want to give people that false sense of hope. But at the same time, I want to be transparent. So I'm okay with putting that out there. But again, we want to make sure that we're doing this.
This is actually a good segue. I was thinking that as to the water sewer, which we're going to take up next. Because as I've always understood it, you know, we identify these project areas throughout the city, let's just take the sewer. And there's three stages to each one of the projects. There's cleaning and investigation, which is going which we're at project area 4. We might be investigating area 7, and we put down some money. We know when we want to do area 7, We think we have a pretty good idea of overall how the area is leaking, but we don't know exactly what's there until we do the cleaning and investigation and the engineering gets there. So, and even though they, with the water pipes, I think you're talking about fresh water pipes, there was this incredible study done with all the information that we have to determine how to prioritize our water pipes, but that doesn't do actually looking at the pipes. Or sometimes you find something that isn't what you expected.
And we as far as paving goes, and Lou, I'm sure you can attest to this, and we're seeing this now especially because the material that we're using, the asphalt, because of the recycled material that's in there, we're not getting the life out of our streets that we used to. So we're going to see that. You're going to see quite a change. If we gave you a 10-year projection now and in 10 years went back and looked at it, it's going to be quite different. The priorities are going to change, which is exactly why we said after 3 years we're going to run street scan again, just so we have that data to compare. So it's not that we want to put that out there, and we will. I'll get you all that information. But I wanted to have good, solid data and know where we're going with the maintenance also and give you a map so we can show everybody what we plan on doing this year. Here's the 10-year plan, but we really need to get the education out there that it's going to change. And I don't want that extra. We get the calls, and we're inundated, especially this time of year, with when is my street going to be paved? You know, when are you going to fix the sidewalk? It's concerning putting that out there. That's all. I mean,
okay. Okay.
So I want to follow up on two things there. You do the you have a plan to do, say, these eight major streets this year, and you go out and do your inspection, and that changes. So how far in advance are you doing your inspections? Is it, you know, a month before, 2 months before, 6 months before, 2 years before?
Well,
because that informs, I think, what Councilor Auchincloss was talking about kind of giving people an idea what they're going to get.
Right, so it happens all along. We'll be starting right now. Now that we've identified the streets we're doing this year, as soon as we get going, we're going to start on looking at the streets for next year. But again, this water main just came up like 2 months ago. So again, here we are in the process, we're planned, we're ready, we've given this to our contractor, paved this street, and now we just...
Why did that only come up 2 months ago?
It was during leak detection, which we do biannually now.
And that's the first time you observed the leak there? There's never one previously?
We didn't have multiple leaks there, I believe.
It's sort of during the year, a classic solution of that main falls, I believe, in the area that 1940, correct me, there was the two where that type of pipe that was cast during the war, the center wall pipe, it's more leak prone. We did the asset management. So we've been doing leak detection twice a year now. The other thing, too, is we found out that through old records and through some pressure problems that we had in the hospital this summer, that there's also a section that we didn't know about that's 8-inch that is tied into a 12-inch loop that goes up Chestnut, from the Con Ave pump station, 12-inch, it goes down Con Ave, Washington Street, Houston Street, back up Chestnut 4th. And we were having pressure problems at New Orleans Hospital. So we went and obviously checked all the valves, we started looking at records, and we found, now in the leak, we found out that this was a section of 8-inch pipe, which is kind of like a choke point. So we need to get that out of there to continue that loop.
Do we have any other, I'm sorry if I'm jumping on the water now.
Why don't we have the presentation on water, sewer, and stormwater?
Can I just ask one more question? On the commission?
Not on water, sewer, sewer.
So, you're doing complete streets, utility poles. What are you doing about those utility poles when you're doing complete streets?
As far as?
Everything. They're horrible. They're horrible. I mean, I drive or walk, and there's wires all over the place. There's stuff coming off them. They're laden with things. I mean, they're hideous, and they really affect the visual well-being. They're tilting a lot of the time. I mean, they're just in terrible shape. So what are we doing as we're spending all this money in complete trees to do with utility poles?
So we don't really have, to be honest with you, a utility pole plan. We're limited. The utilities don't report to us. They're controlled by the DCU. Unless it's an immediate hazard, we can make recommendations, but no, we don't.
Well,
state legislation.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't control the private utilities.
I know that, but I'll just say this. When I sat with the working group on utility issues and double poles, okay, the city's first comment was, it's everybody else's fault. And that wasn't true.
I agree.
So I'm just saying, and I think when we sat around the table, people were actually the utilities. They weren't great, but they were better than we had given them credit for to begin with. So I'm going to really just urge that if we're going to do a street, that we go talk to utilities about the poles. And if there's a pole that's leaning, see if we can get it fixed.
No, we can do that going forward. I'm happy.
I mean, and if they're...
You're only talking about double poles and leaning poles.
Well, no, double poles, we have to leverage.
I'd love to get rid of the poles, but that's not happening in my near lifetime.
No,
there's tons of other stuff in those poles that, you know, we could try to at least eliminate or reduce. And if we're going to do a street, but we're going to have a pole leaning sideways, and our street signs, by the way, hammered into it, you know, people are going to say, well, you're not doing complete streets. So I'm just going to, a real pitch there and try to coordinate with them.
No, nope, and we'll...
And you, I presume, have the contact people?
We meet with every fourth monthly, as we do with NGRID. We haven't gotten the results we have with Eversource that we have with NGRID, and also a lot of the poles are owned by Verizon, and we don't see it down on a regular basis.
Why not?
We have
a lot of them.
There's no reason for them to come to the table.
I know it was governor
for that. How's that working out?
For the
committee is we've spoken with Aaron Golden about this, and Mark, we talked to you about this, but we're going to start those double pole meetings, which we're meeting quarterly, and we're going to transition those over from not just double poles, but to also the host of other issues that we're seeing. So we will focus on the double poles, but we'll start bringing up the other items such as down wires and that sort of thing. To Commissioner's point, we contact Eversource first because Eversource owns the poles, most of the poles here in Newton, but oftentimes it's not an Eversource issue. So when we have wires hanging and that sort of thing, it's finding the true entity of that wire belongs to, and they all finger point. In one case, it took us 8 months to get wires corrected in the Austin Street parking lot, and that was after 20,040 different phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up being RTN on the end. So, and transitioning
or whatever.
So are those meetings going to be like quarterly and currently?
That's what we plan on doing, just like we did with the double poles, is bringing in and start going through that host.
Is there anybody internally in your department who's actually tasked with being on top of these folks, or is it kind of ad hoc?
We have Daryl in engineering has most of our utility contacts.
John does. My experience dealing sometimes with that is you just got to be a complete, I won't use the language, but you got to be a complete pain in the neck. You want to be harassing, but you got to be on the phone like every day, so they're tired of you and they just get it done. It's not going to work all the time, but
no,
very important to all of us, but I'd like to focus on the remainder of the budget. Commissioner, I don't know if you want to.
Hold on.
What's that?
Let some of our staff go if no one else has questions for transportation, Juanita.
Gotcha. I actually was holding on to one question, not for Juanita.
It came up when we were talking about utilities. One of the objectives was to clean up the city lights that are not working. And I think you've been able to repair about 50% of them, as I read in here.
We've made the
report. Do you have a status report on that?
Year to date, we repaired 373 streetlights. One thing is that you would be a little bit more proactive. Mm-hmm. So we proactively went out and identified lights in Newton Corner, in West Newton, along Palm Ave, and in Oak Hill area, and not Phillips 6. So we knew there were problems that weren't in West UA, but we went out and
374?
No,
373. And is that 50% of the broken lights? Are there another?
No, I think you're referring to the underground.
Yes, I am referring to the connection so that the lights don't work because of the underground connection.
There's
50 remaining
underground.
And I think
when
I started, that number might have been as high as
90. Yes, it was right around, it was close to 100. Again, that was another collaboration because we had to work with Eversource. First, they had to confirm the power issue. Whether it was on their end or it was on our end. So that took approximately 6 months. So are we done now? Have they determined the power issue of every light?
What's interesting is that each one will get harder and harder, and each one is a new case. So, a lot of them, they know who the power is, but there's still a lot of back and forth. And to your point, Kelsey, it is a lot of just calling many times a week.
There's one light out right next to the non-existent crosswalk. So there's no light and no crosswalk. I know I'm going to get killed when they don't cross that street, but it'd be nice if we could fix that light. It's right up by City Hall on Palm Ave.
Okay.
It's been out for years.
Yes, that is a tough one. This is why. I'll put it up again. I know there's some real challenges on that one.
That doesn't include access lights, right? That's just street lights. That doesn't include accent lights. Is that just street lights on the poles?
Those numbers don't include the gas lights
that are
special
too. Right. Because there's one at Center in Richardson. We get a bump out there that people say the bump out works extremely well. They like it. But the two access lights are both out for the evening. The bump up's not helping at all because you can't see anything. But I didn't know that those numbers included.
It's my budget. It includes those specialty lights. It does not include the gas lights. And the plus of that type of specialty light is not that different from the standard street lights.
Okay, so those, I can see your note, but people have been saying, oh, well, the bump out has worked, but then if you go there at night, you can't see anything.
Okay, cool. So the 373 lights that don't have anything to do with the Eversource connection that you repaired had to do with faulty fixture?
No, it's a mixed bag of what it is. Faulty fixtures. And we've been very aggressive on getting not just a reimbursement for the fixtures we purchased, but we're getting reimbursements now for the labor.
Excellent.
Many, we have issues with knockdowns, we have underground issues, we have other power issues, cabling issues. What I was told is there was sort of deferred maintenance for a number of years. I don't know if that's true or not.
These are new fixtures?
No, no fixtures. So fixtures is only a percentage.
Okay. And so deferred maintenance on what?
On some of the wiring and the cables.
Inside the poles.
So yeah, our friends were like, oh my gosh, this is almost all the LED fixtures and pulse fixtures, and it's actually not the cases.
I see.
No, there's probably five categories.
Okay.
And the photo cells also have a high failure.
Would it be possible to have a thumbnail summary of what's going on with our city streetlights at some point?
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be great. And to know also what lies ahead.
Yeah, no, we've made great headway this year on those underground. And again, we're up to date on regular outages, so it's those last 50 that we really have to work on now. Those are going to be the ones that need major repair. We're going to be trenching.
probably conduit and wire replacement.
And this is the city's issue now?
These are going to mostly be the city's issue at this point, yeah.
Okay.
On the last comment that you just made, on the photo cells, the high failure rate, you know, I had always thought, wow, photo cells, no moving parts, this lasts forever. What's going on with the photo cells?
I couldn't tell you exactly what happened, but it's when a fixture is out, many times it is the photo cell, it's not the fixture itself, so it's the switch that's turning them on and off. I don't know what the failure is inside of the cell itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, if you wanted to dismiss some staff before we go into water sewer,
thank you so much.
And thank you for your terrific work this year, Juanita and Nicole. Fabulous.
Sit down, Lou.
So, So, I think what we're looking for on water, sewer, and stormwater, I want to just let everybody know the water, sewer, stormwater team hasn't met in quite a while, so I'm not as up on this as I might be coming into budget. So could you just give us a sort of an overview of what's happened and where we are in each of the strategic plans, and then maybe a little bit about, I noticed the overall rates are not going up anywhere near the 3.9%, if I'm looking at this correctly. We have a 2% increase in stormwater and a 3% increase in both water and sewer, as I'm looking at it in the budget book. That's okay, I just think we can talk about that as part of the...
Okay.
See how you came up with the numbers.
Okay, do you want to talk rates?
Well, do we want to talk rate? I mean, isn't that what we're doing on...
that's what we're doing on Monday. I just thought maybe we could understand why rates are not going up before
the
amount.
Everybody will be there, you know what I'm saying? It's great. I'm that's why we have Monday to have the hearing, the presentation of the hearing, right?
Well, it's the only way we fund this section of the budget, on the other hand. So, I guess, if you could just... I don't want to get in deeply into what's happening with the rates in terms of the tiers or anything like that. No,
yeah,
I don't want
to.
Rob, can you do a quick version of it? Rob, can you do a quick version of it?
If you look at the budget book, I know where you're looking at it, it's 3%.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a decimal point tax rate. I don't think that's some of these tasks. So it is more than 3%, above some 4.
Okay.
Where are we on
this? So in the budget book, there's a stormwater, yep, sewer, water section in the back,
yep,
and there's a summary page on each budget.
So you're looking at the first page.
Yeah.
So for stormwater, there isn't going to be no change in terms of what the rates will be. So that will be zero unless there is impervious surface that has been added over the course of the year.
So it says 2%, though. That's why I'm confused. It says there's a 2% change.
By rate, what do they mean? Rate pay? The residents?
Well, we have three plans. Yeah. We recall the city's raising rates no more than 2.9% for all three categories each year in order to implement the plan. So, and Rob and I remember you telling me that these rates were not going to go up, so I see it's 2%.
And that's because of the debt service. So, if you look at the large increase in debt service, you don't have that to be issue. So, in terms of the capital work that we're going to start doing, you're going to see the debt service increase.
Okay.
Where's that?
I can't distinguish the debt service.
So, that's the 65%. You're going to see the bond maturity and debt interest.
What page are you on?
One. Page one of the
one. You are on summary page. Okay.
Yep.
It's 107, Treasurer Collector.
So when you guys voted, through and did the rate change for stormwater,
on the
maturity, it took into account what we would need to fund that service through the projects that we're doing. So when we increase the fund, you increase rates to fund that service. This is going to be the first year that you're going to see a large increase in that service for the projects that were done this fiscal year. So you start paying for selling and you
Okay. So maybe we could just go into the substantive work, what we accomplished this year and what we're going to accomplish next year in stormwater infrastructure. We'll start with stormwater infrastructure.
Okay. This year, FY17, we had capital investments in replacing drainage on Adams Street and Dedham Street. For FY18, we are doing Hammond Brook pipe replacements, the Forest Grove pump station, and the Laundry Brook culvert over right adjacent to the Cabot School. Actually, part of it's underneath the current Cabot School. So we're coordinating with the school to do that repair work this year. We have an investment in our NIPTES program. New regulations go into effect this year. Ted and his staff, Maria, have done a great job being out in front of that already, so we have the majority of that done, but we're going to continue to move forward on that. That includes a lot of the stormwater work we're doing, right down to the street sweeping. So those regulations are going to increase as we move forward. The ordinance was also adopted for the illicit discharge detection and elimination program, which is also part of NIPTES. So again, we're out ahead of that also.
Okay. And again, there's no proposed change in the rates.
There is no proposed change in the stormwater rates for FY18.
That means we're not increasing the level of work on stormwater, but we've identified a lot of work to be done. Why aren't we suggesting that we increase rates more to get level?
Well, we may have to in the future. We will have to increase.
Why aren't we doing this with your
stormwater rates? We just implemented it last year, and it was a significant increase for some people. And again, I think we wanted to see what was going to happen with NIPTES. Because the regulations weren't definitive until this year. So we will have to develop a stronger plan going forward and possibly look at a rate increase in the future.
So we're doing three substantive infrastructure projects this year,
yeah.
Major infrastructure projects, particularly the Laundry Brook. That's a very large project. Three separate culverts over there, I think. Right.
How many culverts are in there?
I'm sorry.
Laundry
Brook, Cabot. Aren't there three culverts over there?
No.
No?
One more.
There's
a culvert.
Okay.
The Laundry Brook culvert runs on the north side, back kind of diagonally on the north side of the school between bridges.
Yeah.
They actually run through Cabot Park. Ends up in Watertown at the end of Jackson Street. But, and then Edmund Brook, it comes down, it runs parallel to Parkview, and where it runs off the curve of Parkview. So where those two meet is where we'll start the replacement of Laundry Brook, and we'll end it in the right of way of public right of way of F. 5x10. Cast in place, reinforced concrete culvert. We're taking that out. We're putting in a 5x10 precast culvert. A 400 ton right on the field.
Okay.
So 5x10 is 5 feet?
Yes.
Why?
5 feet by 10 feet.
5 feet high, 10 feet wide.
And just so you understand it, this is a $2.8 million project, this Cabot Laundry Brook. So again, it's significant.
It is a significant project. I know you have a follow-up question. I have to say I don't understand the stormwater 5-year plan. I'm looking at a figure of $170,000 in 2018. What am I looking at here? Because I'm in the CIC on the stormwater. There's only one page. There's a narrative, and the stormwater 5-year plan has only one number. The rehabilitation of the Forest Grove pump station for $170,000. And I know there's all this other work being planned, so I'm not sure what I'm looking at here. Why is this? Only a portion, perhaps, of what I think you're doing.
Well, we just did Adams Street, Dedham Street.
Is that the supplemental that you're looking at?
No, I'm actually looking at the CIP that we got in October.
This one that you just gave us, with the budget, has more stuff in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the supplemental. That would be the most up-to-date. That does have, if you look at priority 9, that's the Laundry Brook Culvert.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
2.8.
Okay. I'm just not
going to
look in this.
And I believe there are some amendments coming. Is that correct, Rob? Amendments to the CIP?
Yeah, I think we're not being here tonight. People are being getting it updated for them. Okay. And then
we're going to have a revised version of the supplemental for Monday?
I believe so. Yeah, or at least just a summary. I know she's working on something related.
Okay. So to understand what we're doing with stormwater, we've got these large capital projects, but we're also beginning to develop the plan for addressing stormwater quality to conform to the MISCIS regulations. And where are we with that, with the consulting or in-house?
Sure, I'll let my
sheriff on that.
Well, I should have invited you here.
As far as the NIPSES goes, like Jenna said, I got the IDD ordinance passed, which deals with water quality and quantity. We're in the process of, I've got an agreement or a proposed agreement with a Woodard and Kearns who has previously done stormwater for us. They actually started the first dry weather, wet weather sampling back in 95 when we had the Charles River Initiative going. So anyway, they're developing an IDDG plan, which basically we go out and we test, sample 104 outfalls going into the Charles River during dry weather and during wet weather. Dry weather, theoretically, you shouldn't have any flow coming down the drain pipe. If you do, then you have to go back and you have to investigate that drainage basin to find out where that flow is coming from. And you sample it for surfactants, you sample it for coliform, you can sample it for a number of things, ammonia. So anyway, we've been doing that. And Maria's been doing that, and she couldn't keep up with it, so we brought in SDE for $20,000 a year, and they go out and they sample 200 samples, dry and wet weather. We have all that data, and actually we've gone out with DDP, and we've sampled with DDP in the Cheesecake Brook area, because it's such a large area, if you have to segregate the area to try to chase it down. So anyway, and we submit those reports to DEP quarterly, and we tell them what we're doing, you know. And up to this point, for the most part, all we've been telling them is that we're sampling, and yeah, we're looking into this drainage basin that has above standard levels. To investigate that, it's not much different than our sewer I&I program. You got to go out, you got to do CD work, you have to pop manholes, you may have to do some dye testing. You got to find out where the flow is coming in, you know, mile and a half, 2-3 miles of pipe. So what the IDP plan will that we got to submit to DEP under NIPSES will tell DEP how we're going to do that, what approach we're going to take. Is it going to be a top-down approach, bottom-up approach? When we find something, how we're going to correct it. That's going to be done probably within the next 6 to 8 months. The $100,000 that we put in the NIPSES, in all likelihood, will be used to start those investigations. Right now, the priority ones is Cheesecake Brook, which is one of the largest drainage basins, and Laundry Brook, about the second largest basin. And that's what that money will be used for. We have to generate an NOI that's got to be And by September of 2017, Maria's working on that. We need to sit down because the NOI is going to basically tell the state or the feds how we're going to manage our stormwater. And when you tell them, then they're going to say, okay, give us a stormwater management plan. All right? Well, that plan's going to include everything from lose inspectors, making sure that contractors have pre- and post-erosion controls. If they'll have, spill prevention plans for not only highways, but recreation, every public facility that's owned.
So will the city need to come up with some new ordinances or more enforcement?
That's basically what the IDD ordinance did. Mm-hmm. You know, that's your guidelines, your rules, your regs for the MS4. So in order to generate that NOI, you got to get all the players at the table and say, okay, highway department, I'm telling DEP that you have to sweep the streets four times a year in this plan. I'm going to say to Lou, your guys are going to have to go out and, document construction, pre and post, take pictures, spill prevention plans, we have them. The fire department, Maria found out the fire department has them. Mm-hmm. They're 10 years old, and they're supposed to be reviewed every 5 years. Mm-hmm. So that hasn't been done. So all these things are spelled out in the NOI, and then you basically come up with a stormwater plan.
So just big picture, when do we look at a draft of what your recommended plan is for improving stormwater quality? I mean, some of these things are very basic, I think, to the council, because we talk all the time about how private contractors out there don't keep their sites well, mm-hmm. and they are filling up our storm drains with junk because they mess up constantly. We don't have enough inspectors to stay on top of them. So I don't want to get into the weeds on that. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm wondering, just roughly, when do we look at a first crack at this? Is it a
stormwater plan? I sure about the timeline. I want to say you have to have a stormwater plan 1 year after you submit the NOI.
What is the NOI stand for?
Notice of intent.
Okay.
I want to say that. I can get you the timeline.
What benefit do we get in the end?
Clean water.
Clean water.
Yeah, clean water. That do we get?
We're regulated also, but this is part of the Federal Clean Water Act, so we're required to comply.
Because what it is 5 years from now, you have to have a phosphorus removal program. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm. The city has been.
Has
an algorithm based on the topography and the system, everything, that says we got to take out, I think, 388 kilograms a year of phosphorus from what we discharge into the Charles River. All right, and we have to do that over this period of time. How do you do that? No fertilizers, no washing cars. Underground detention areas to try to put as much stuff in the ground. The biggest, what I found out, is the biggest way that you can take out phosphorus from your stormwater? No, pick up leaves. That's how complicated it is.
Okay. Really, I was just looking for big picture, and when would we roughly be looking at the rudiments of the plan?
So we'll get back to our next assembly, because I think we have to do the notice of intent, and then it sounds like it's a year, but I don't recall.
There is a timeline.
There is a timeline.
Okay. All right. We'll just follow up with that.
I'll give you a copy.
How many watersheds do we have
in the problem?
Air
pollution, noise pollution.
Yeah, how
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah. Crystal Lake must be one.
We're not going to get to that.
We're
done with, I think, the stormwater. We want to go over
it. It's leaving, so we're definitely
going to would like really the high level on the sewer program, where we are, where we're going.
Sure. So on sewer, we've completed the infiltration project, three and four. We're in year four of the 5-year plan. It's a $49 million plan. We're in year four of that.
Aren't we in year five?
We're coming into year five.
Okay.
The project five will begin in FY18.
Construction.
Construction, yes. Investigation, design that has been completed. So construction for area five is in FY18.
And then six, you begin the design of?
Six is in design now. Seven in investigation and assessment being done.
Some of our capital investments in sewer are equipment replacement, work in some of our pump stations also, just updating pumps that require replacement as they reach their expected life.
According to Josh Moore, but you might know this better, but there's a tremendous opportunity for improving fuel efficiency with new pumps and pump stations. Are you finding that?
Not necessarily. This would be electrical. It's new technology. It's variable speed motors. So yes, there is savings there also. So not only is it replacing that equipment, but getting the latest and greatest. And we do see cost savings there with this new equipment.
Okay.
We've just also completed our SCADA implementation, that update, right, so that's up and running, so that's complete now. That's the system that monitors our pump stations electronically, so we can do it remotely. It sends us alarms, it gives us all the data, things like that, energy usage. We can tell when pumps are having issues before they break down. So again, that's been completed this year also.
Any questions on sewer? Move to water.
Just finally get sewer open, and now you're moving.
Okay. All right. Water overview. The water program.
Water, as you know, you may not know, but everyone's heard about the lead service replacement program. We're on target to start that at the end of this month and complete it by, June of 18? We're looking at
that. Yeah, right around now.
As we said, we've had almost half the people respond that we've reached out to, approximately 570 residents who are going to comply with the program right now. Other capital investments are in the Walden Hill Covered Reservoir. We are replacing the two gate valves up there next year, which is going to allow us to shut the reservoir down so we can leak test that. It is a 120-year-old structure, so if this is we've never been able to do this. Hopefully this will help us with some of our unaccounted water. That will be happening probably this fall. And we were going to do it last fall, but MWRA required us to replace these valves because the valves that are there now are the originals. So they're 120 years old. So the fear was that those valves broke open or closed or partially, we would affect the water pressure possibly in the majority of the city. So there was a big fear there. So we were required to do that. We tried to do it before winter. We got a cold snap in December, so we had to push it off. So people have asked, why wasn't that done? That's the reason why.
So these are our valves.
These are our valves, yes.
Okay.
So they feed the reservoir.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for a long time, and the one thing we talked about, which maybe we want to bring back to this table at another date, is what kind of notification, how we're going to notify the public, because it affects such a big area, right?
It does, and we're going to do it after hours. There's a whole plan in place. We worked quite a while.
It's NWRA.
NWRA.
There's a whole procedure.
We will
know
before it happens. Okay.
We're in year six of our 20-year plan, our water line replacement cleaning plan. That's an $80 million project. What area is Ted?
I'm sorry, for...
Where are we at with that?
Water is scattered, right?
So we identify the most leak-prone pipes and prioritize them from there. So again, that's year six of the 20-year plan again.
Okay. We haven't made any progress, I mean, because of these boundaries. Have we made any progress on your account for water recently?
Actually, we just got our numbers this year, and it's down for the first time in a few years.
Really?
So again, as we spoke earlier, we used to leak test annually. We're now doing it biannually. I think there were close to 80 leaks that were found.
Yeah.
So that's significant also. So now we're doing it biannually, and again, we hope we don't find an issue with the reservoir, but then again, if we do, that's where probably maybe a good portion of our water is going.
What's the number down to?
The number's down to 30%, and if you... That
down to 30%?
From?
34, I think was...
I don't remember a number that high, so, again, that's the
30. No, those are numbers we have, so that's again, it's
really high.
Yeah.
So that means 30% of the water that comes into the city disappears into the...
Well, I mean...
And again, that's part of the automatic we asked for, where we can go in now, where we get these estimated reads. Now we can... Before we had no leverage to address these, so now we have that. We can turn water off if we have to. Again, it's a last resort.
So it's affecting people stealing water.
Stealing, or if we have meter issues where people refuse to let us into their property, things of that nature. So this is another step that we can take to address this also.
I remember talking about how the lines lead to the houses from the city. There was a high incidence of leakage. What if anything have we done or do we plan to do about that? We had talked about docketing an item to make it a requirement, for example, that on sale of a house, an inspection would be required. And presumably the buyers of the house would want the pipe replaced if it was leaking water.
Dan and I have been interested in pursuing that topic in the water sewer group, and meetings have been postponed. So we are still very interested in pursuing that and bringing it back to committee. But there are many component parts to the strategic plan that are being worked on simultaneously. And a very crackerjack staff who are probably working overtime to do it. However, we really are very interested in doing that.
That might be...
As the years go by, some of this could be going away because it's on private property.
You know, it's over 30 years, let's say, the whole housing stock, 90% of it turns over, we would do away with 90% of that particular issue. How did Brookline get down to
9%?
I don't know how they do. I'd have to look at their numbers to see.
What I understand is they've completed all the rehabilitation of their water system.
They have spent a lot of money. I mean, they have a very updated water system.
And sewer system. They're working on the stormwater system, but they've completed 100% rehab, so they're on predictable maintenance.
Now, you know, as far as the services go, I mean, it used to be where when we cleaned in lines or replaced, cleaned in lines, we didn't worry about the water services in the street. Now we replace them, so at least those are there. You pick leaks up on services when you do leak detection, so now we're doing that twice a year. You know, we just identified 580 services that are the older services that we're trying to talk these people into
lead,
even if it's iron, you know, replace it. You know, we're trying to knock things out as much as we can. You know, the idea that when you sell a house, like, you know, when we rehab a house over 50, you require them to put in a new water and sewer service. I mean, that's great. You know, that's great. But, you know, it would be a tough plan. You know, it would take a lot of planning in a city this size. You know, somebody told me they do, what, 2,000 sales a month or something like that. What's the, how many?
About 5 or 6% of the houses turn over a year.
Oh, okay. How to manage it, you know, who's going to make the call, who's going to follow through.
Some of those are ready. I know that you all,
yeah.
And plus fairly, the lead service line replacement program and all the lead issues at the schools, I think, really took all the air out of the room last year.
They did. We said we'd reconvene those meetings next month. Now that we have the lead service plan is out there, we've done all that work, we've got the schools under control with buildings. This is our next step again. We're going to get back on this on account of water. The good news is we're starting to trend down after years of trending up. So,
you know, if you look at the leak detection that we do twice a year,
mm-hmm.
every time, and we've been doing it for as long as I've been here, you average well over 200 million gallons a year that you lose for leak detection. So
before you.
Well,
you
know, a guy comes in, I bring in a leak detection guy, he comes in for 6-8 weeks, and he finds 80 leaks, 200 plus this year, or this year was 248 million gallons a year. He leaves for 8 months, he comes back, spends another 2 months, comes back into town, finds another 200 and some million gallons. In the meantime, my guys are out, and that's 80. We do 200 leaks a year. We repair the leaks that he finds, and then we find another 100, 120. All right? So, how true is that 248? Well, if you take that 248 and you minus that amount for the 30%, now we're on account of water down to 23%.
Mm-hmm.
Now you look at irrigation. How many people have irrigation meters and that aren't being metered? Water stuff. You know, the fire department.
Can you give an update on the irrigation? Sorry, that's another part of the budget we were trying to track. So
we have
irrigation meters.
As of yesterday, according to Ms. Zigarelli, we have 2,607 irrigation meters in.
Where everybody's paid up on their transponders and
that's account. Well, no, that's we have 2,607 irrigation accounts set up where people are irrigating their lawns. All right. As far as that issue we had with MCUs,
mm-hmm.
everybody's been billed.
And have they paid?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the caveat is to that is, you know, people got billed $120 on their quarterly bill. Well, there's, I don't know the exact number. There's 157 that paid the bill and never responded. All right. So how do I know that they didn't put in an irrigation meter? Thought that, you know, because they signed off with the plumber. You know,
but now we have the ability to go in and tell them we need.
So we got to contact all those people, certified letter, and set up an inspection.
So were those the meters that walked out without being paid for?
Yeah. So there's over 700. So we've got it down to 157 now that everyone's paid.
Everybody's paid.
There's 157 we're not sure the status of, so we need to go out.
So
the next step is to go out.
Yeah. We're going to send out, and, you know, we've got those, we've got tampers, dead MCUs. You know, there's probably 1,000, if not more, out there where we got to get in and inspect the meter. So by putting that ordinance in effect where we can shut off the water, now when I write a letter and send it to them and say, listen, you know, you got 60 days to let us in there, or on this date, at this time, we're going to shut your water off. Gives us a little bit more leverage. And, you know, and we'll have to send them out, you know, sequentially, because you can't just send out 1,000 letters and have, you know, 800 people call you and want an appointment. So
is there enough staff to do this job?
Yeah.
Because it seems like a really important job that one and done will just have to be maintained, but we need to get that body of work done.
Right, and as we continue to work through our water program, again, we're in year six of the 20-year program, so as we continue to replace these lines, and now we're doing the mains, as we said, we're also doing the service lines, so it's 100% as we go through these streets.
One more question. The inspections that we do, are we, and the leaks that we find, are these leaks in just the city owned stuff, or do these also include the lines to the houses?
Yes, the lateral.
Actually,
most of the leaks are.
Most of the leaks to the left. So of the 200 million gallons that leak out, how much of that is lateral? Like half of it, or most of it, or?
Let's see here.
I think we might need to, this is going to take some time to look up, we've always gotten a guess at that, and we probably should hold it for another meeting where we're digging into the program.
I don't have the exact volume, but I can tell you, in the last survey, I have 7 leaks on mains, 17 on services, 6 on hydrants, and they've got 2 on others, which I have to look at what those are.
So it kind of points to the need to do something about the lateral as quickly as we can.
Those aren't
laterals.
Those are all the city lines that you're talking about. Oh, they're not?
No, they're the laterals.
Oh, I thought they were the service connections.
Well, service connections, that's...
Oh, but we own those.
Yeah.
We own from the pipe to the...
Right.
And a lot of them, and actually a lot of them are in the street.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
You know, there's
a lateral, but the city, it's the part of the city.
Then you own.
Yeah.
The last round, I think, out of all services, 32, I can't remember. Between 32 and 17, I think I had to send out 8 letters to the homeowners because the leak was on their property.
Okay.
So they are showing up a lot in the street. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is very interesting information.
It almost feels overwhelming.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of work going on.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount going on. And I want to really, just on the case, thank you so much for all of the hard work you've done. I think there's been a tremendous leap forward in the past couple of years, and we've got a great team. Former and newer employees, and really appreciate the work that you've been doing. It's making a difference. You can see it.
Thank you.
Well, we can see it anyway. Soon the public will start to
The public does appreciate it.
So we're supposed to draw votes, and there's 5 of us left. So can I have a show of hands of who is intending to approve this budget? There you go. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that is...
Enough.